This morning I was born again. I was born again complete.
Hi, this is Tiffany the Last, and I'm with Ellis, Paul, and Flynn, and we're at Acoustic Music San Diego. Hi, guys.
Hi. Hi, how are you doing?
Great, thank you.
My hand, it feels unlimited. My body feels like the sky. I feel at home in the universe where yonder planets fly. This morning I was born again. My past is dead and gone. This great eternal moment is my great eternal dawn. Each drop of blood within the life I breathe is united with these mountains and the mountains with the sea.
There are all these ideas out there of what it's like to be a career musician, and both of you have had successful careers. And I was just wondering, from when you started until now, what's one thing that you weren't expecting?
Let me see. The one thing I wasn't expecting, what do you think? Do you have an answer to that, Mr. Flynn?
In the music industry or yeah. since? The record industry in flux and changing completely. That it's completely different from when both of us started off, I think. It's
the technology. I never thought the technology would get ahead of us like it did.
Yeah.
You know.
It's completely changed. Like when I was first recording them.
Back in 8-track days.
These 2-inch tapes, you know, these big heavy 2-inch tapes and now it's just all computerized and hard drive, and it's so much easier, and it's come a long way. So yeah,
and for the whole industry really to be driven now by the internet, and not by record labels and not by corporations as much as it was when we started, that's a surprise. It puts the power back in the hands of, you know, the individual musicians, and so that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice for people just starting out?
Being a lawyer is more lucrative.
Exactly.
You know, when you're starting out, I always thought of myself in these terms too. It's about 10% talent and about 90% sheer stupidity in starting out. Because you don't know how much work you have in front of you, and you have this sort of blind, earnest drive that sort of propels you forward. And hard work is what gets you anywhere. It's there are a lot of talented people that don't work half as hard as I am, who should be making a lot more money and have more shows, who just can't get it together for whatever reason. But really, if I knew how much work it was really going to be and all the sacrifices that I had to make, I might have second guessed myself early on.
Really? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you thought you had a choice. This wasn't just this calling that you just had to be a singer songwriter.
Well, it was a calling. It was a wrong number on some days. There are a lot of hang-ups involved. No, it's definitely my calling. There's nothing I'm better suited to do. I know that. Mm-hmm. It fits all of the aspects of my personality. I like writing, and I like imagery, because I'm also an artist, and I feel like I'm doing that with my lyrics. And then there's just the whole mechanical side of playing, which I love, and traveling, which I love, and meeting new people. I love all of those things. I wasn't born to be an accountant or a lawyer or a doctor or a candlestick maker. I was really born to do what I'm doing. But, you know, it's still tough. There are, you know, I could be a school teacher or a novelist or something, a journalist, who knows. And not sacrifice time from family and, you know, all the things that I've lost to being on the road. But I love it.
I'd like to go back to that candlestick maker thing. I think you'd be really good at that.
You know, wax is my medium.
Don't get me started.
Ellis, in your song Martyrs Lounge, you very cleverly placed people together like Gandhi and John Lennon in a bar and JFK and Joan of Arc kissing in the back. And I was just wondering, out of all the people you could have included, why did you pick them? And you have others in the song too.
Well, you know, it's almost an accident of whatever line I came up with. I chose Gandhi and John Lennon because I make a joke about a bar fight, and they were sort of known to be, you know, peacekeepers, mm-hmm. and peacemakers and sort of nonviolent protesters. So I thought that was kind of funny. And then I have Marilyn Monroe looking over at Joan of Arc and John F. Kennedy making out in the corner, and she's sitting with Jacques Cousteau, and they're talking about the sharks that they used to know.
JFK, Joan of Arc, sit in the corner, kiss at London Eye. Marilyn Monroe, Jacques Cousteau, talk about the sharks they used to know. Hey, hey, yeah. Hi, hi.
I could have put anybody in there. Sometimes I rotate people out just for fun.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just to keep it fresh. But that is a clever song. It's fun.
And so, can you just tell us a few of the names that you sometimes rotate in?
Well, you know, like MLK occasionally shows up, and Janis Joplin has showed up, and Jimi Hendrix occasionally is in the band with Kurt Cobain, and he shows up, and they're jamming together, and, you know, people like that get thrown in.
Thank you. Flynn, your song Human, Cher sings that, and I was just wondering if you specifically wrote that for her?
No, I did not. It...
He wrote it for Sonny Bono, and then this tragic skiing accident happened.
Okay. I don't know how to comment to that. No comeback for that.
I think it just, like, leased a seat in purgatory for that for most of eternity.
No, that song actually, believe it or not, I wrote that song in probably 10 minutes. It came to me really fast. Cher was nowhere in the picture. And it was one of those wonderful moments where a song just comes out and everything seems to fit together. That doesn't often happen, because usually songs take an awful lot longer than that to happen, but mm-hmm. that just so happened. Human was a song that I wrote in 10 minutes, which was great. And then the Farley Brothers got a hold of the CD, and they loved the song, and they played it for her, and they asked her if, you know, she'd sing it as the title track of the movie, mm-hmm. and she said sure. So that's how that happened and came about, and I got to work with her and Los Angeles, which was pretty cool, hang out with her. So that was, yeah, it was great. So it wasn't written for her at all.
I don't see rights, and I don't see wrong in anything I've done, in where I've And I'm only human, and yes, I've made mistakes. I wish that I could foresee what I'm doing wrong. Through a door. See it in my face. I'm chasing passion down a one-way street, but I'm in command of lost control. And I'll tell you one thing certain, that I'll never fake it for anyone.
When you guys are starting to write a song, you said that one took 10 minutes. Is there a certain time of history that you like to reflect on, or areas of the world, or what inspires you?
Well, you like pilgrims.
Yeah, that first Thanksgiving seems to be I write from wherever I am at the time. You know, right now I'm writing songs for the next record, and I'm writing songs about people that are stuck in the economic position that I'm stuck in. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm struggling with mortgages, struggling with the market being down, and all the resulting things like less people coming to shows, gas is more expensive. And so I find that a lot of the songs I'm writing have people who are in that same kind of battle. And that way it kind of reflects the bigger picture of where we all are, and it'll be a little more universal. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I try and pull from that. And sometimes I dip way into my youth and go back to when I was 15 and 16 and 17, falling in love for the first time. Just a reminder of what innocence is all about. And I'm middle-aged now, so I sometimes dip back into that quagmire.
Mm. Yeah, I tend to dip into more interpersonal stuff, or personal stuff, I suppose.
He's an emotional writer. He writes from emotions.
A lot of times when I start songs, I don't know what they're about or where they're going or whatever, and
Even
when I'm finished. No. But usually by the time I'm finished, I've got a good clear direction of where it's going, but it usually takes quite some time to get me there. But I tend to dabble more in
emotions,
relationships and stuff like that, and that's what appeals to me, and yeah, like an armchair psychologist, kind of always looking at what I'm going through on any given day, and I'll try and write about it.
Mm-hmm. What would you say a singer-songwriter's place in our world is? If they didn't exist, where would we be? Who would we turn to relate to as a listener?
If singer-songwriters weren't around? Well, I mean,
Sarah Palin comes to mind.
We saw a great sticker today, and it just had, you know, Obama's posters have hope on the bottom of it, and I saw one. Saw one on her face, we couldn't stop laughing. It just said nope. I thought it was great. So what would we be? Well, I mean, there'd be storytellers, I presume. I mean, storytellers were really big in Ireland. Even when I was growing up, people used to go around for rambles. That's what it's called, going from house to house after supper at night time or whatever, and just sit around and tell stories. So mm-hmm. I'm sure that's what people would turn to. I don't know.
Your modern day ramblers?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I've thought a lot about this question, because it kind of defines what a folk musician is all about. Because, you know, scientists deal with truth in black and white and in numbers and in equations, and it's a very specific kind of measured version of truth. And newspaper journalists supposedly try and bring in fact and their witnesses and you know, this corroboration between witnesses, and then there's fact checkers, and the musician uses music to sort of breach an emotional gap that isn't there with science and all the other things, and we bend the truth to sort of come to a higher truth. So we exaggerate and lie and use metaphor and in search of something bigger than all of us, you know. Like, the answer really isn't blowing in the wind. Wind is wind, mm-hmm. you know, but we can use a metaphor like that to get to a really broader understanding of it. And I don't think anybody does that other than musicians. Maybe painters, and occasionally mm-hmm. a movie might be able to do that, kind of spell out a grander truth. But artists are the ones that are sort of responsible for that.
And you don't feel when you're writing that you have to make every line valid, or you're not trying to prove a fact. You can just throw in humor or whatever you think.
Yeah, to support whatever it is. And sometimes you have to have facts in there to sort of get a little backbone. I'm more of a storyteller, and I deal with people's, you know, path from A to B, whereas Flynn might write more internally about the character that he's writing about, or himself. I write externally and hopefully try and show an internal thing from the mm-hmm. outside, and you know, so it's an important role. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's an important role. And the great thing about it is that not only do we get a chance to paint the world the way we see it, and we want it to be reflected in people's images of the world, but we get to learn about the world ourselves from a writer's eye, which gives a lot of valuable, you know, life experience.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly don't give it that much thought, I guess. I just write, I suppose, what's coming to my mind at that particular time. You'd give it a lot more thought than I would nowadays.
Yeah, and you know, I'm always in positions where I have to talk about it because I teach a lot. Oh. I teach songwriting a lot, so I always, you know, think about what I'm going to say to students when they ask me what their role is or whatever. Uh-huh. So yeah, to me, every time I write a song, I have expanded my life experience, my understanding of the human condition in the world at large, and that's why I can't stop. You know, I want to get to some kind of nirvana point, you know, that Buddhists try and find, where I think they have just broader understanding of everything, who they are and the world we're living.
Mm-hmm. We're both trying to constantly improve, I think, our craft, our songwriting, that's what we do on a daily basis, is constantly try and, at least that's what I do, improve.
Yeah, I mean, if you broke down how our conversation in the last 4 days, a lot of it was just talking about songwriting.
Yeah.
You know, and what we're trying to do with it personally and artistically. And just like Van Gogh and Gauguin back at, you know, the end of the 1800s.
So what percentage did you say there?
That they were drinking absinthe. Yeah. And we were stopping.
Absolute?
Absinthe.
Oh, absinthe.
It's like a hallucinogenic alcohol. Yeah, yeah. But you and I start at Starbucks and get coffee.
I wonder where we're going to eat.
I'm hungry too, yeah. Feeding him has been a real challenge. Because he just has this endless hunger for food.
Yeah, you want a banana?
I have one more question about one of your songs, Alice. It's the song that you sing with Vance Gilbert, "I Am a Citizen of the World." Mm. Do you remember what inspired that?
That was a 9/11 song. And when the New York Times was published, and they published the faces and little biographies of everyone who died in the disaster, and it was like looking at, you know, it was like a Gap commercial. They're black and white, red, yellow, you know. So many people of different, because that building held this incredible variety of Americans and foreigners, for that matter. There were Arabs and Jews killed in it side by side, and whites and blacks, and you know, there were people that were janitors and people that were major executives and government officials and things like that. And just so to me, it wasn't just an attack on America. It was like an attack on all of us, and that's why we wrote this song.
Blue September day, sky came tumbling down, living in a world of hate, dormants crying at heaven's gate.
100 nations of Tower One, Muslims, Hindus, Jews, and Christians, Father Michael says a prayer,
whispered up into thin air.
Plagiarism comes to mind. The word plagiarism.
It does.
Don't steal from us.
No,
you?
Just thanks for listening and all your support, and please continue it on, and we'll continue on. And,
that's not a one word thing.
No, it's
that's,
not, is it?
That's like a sentence. Just come up with one word. Come on. This is a Freudian thing. Just come up with one word. Like bastard, for example.
That does come to mind. I was thinking of something a little more hardcore, but it's okay. I don't know. Thank you. It's great talking to you. And are you going to eat that banana?
All right. And we're piratepods.com, and we like to end our interviews with a pirate impression or a joke of some sort.
You're kidding.
I know, come on.
No.
Come on, Uar.
She just said she wants us to say I mating or something.
Or something.
What's Uar?
I have no
That's
idea.
Not a pirate noise.
Yeah, it is.
Uar?
We'll do your O matey then.
Arr! Good night, y'all.
Yeah. Uar.